You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
For any of you 80s action aficionados, you may recognize that as the title theme of the 1987 hit Predator. And I had the unique opportunity, why are we playing that tonight? I had the unique opportunity this week to participate in Frody Midyord's Decameron Film Festival to discuss that particular movie, iconic action sci-fi crossover film, as well as my friendship with one of the movie's stars, Sonny Landham. And Sonny was a longtime friend of us here at TPC up until his passing in 2017. Well, this has been a really interesting thing that Frody has been working on, an impressive array of guests discussing a variety of iconic films during this online festival. So anyway, listen, we love our standard fare, but it was a fun departure from that standard fare and something that I hope you'll enjoy watching. If you didn't see it, I know a lot of you did because we've gotten a lot of emails about it, but if you didn't see it, we will be putting it up on our website this Wednesday. So with that announcement out of the way, welcome to TPC this Saturday evening, April the 24th. And what we're going to be doing tonight, of course, is not talking about Predator. We're going to be talking about the Derek Chauvin verdict. And sure enough, Keith, we said last week that it would appear as though with the jury entering into deliberation, you could very well have a verdict by the time we came back on the air. And indeed, we have. And the verdict is in, guilty on all charges. And this is what we were talking about just a moment ago. I want to start with this. We're going to spend the entire first hour talking about this case. Then in the second hour, we're going to bring on Tim Murdoch. Tim Murdoch will be on to help us further provide an analysis and opinion. And then in the third hour, we're going to wrap up our Confederate History Month coverage with a salute to our ancestors. And this is key. We're going to be talking about our personal patrimony and our shared heritage in this third and final hour tonight. As we said last week, our ancestors are literally part of you. So to understand yourself, you must first understand them. But help me first, Keith, try to understand this verdict. So we talked last week about Chauvin being charged with overlapping and really redundant charges in some way, second-degree murder, third-degree murder, and homicide. First-degree murder, as people will know, is premeditated murder. You plan to go out and kill George Floyd, for instance. And the second-degree murder would be, as you said a moment ago, a crime of passion. Once things got heated, you didn't intend to kill him when you woke up that morning, but once things got heated, you intended to. Third-degree murder would be accidental.
It'd be reckless.
Reckless. It happened as a cause of your actions, even if it wasn't planned.
For example, if you shot into a crowd or if you were speeding at 90 miles an hour through a school zone and hit a child, that would be reckless homicide. Then you have a fourth level in many states called negligent homicide. That would be, for example, you just committed a traffic infraction, like you turned left in front of oncoming traffic. A wreck happens, and a person in the other car is killed as a result of that wreck. You would be prosecuted for either vehicular homicide or negligent homicide.
All right, so in your opinion as an attorney, I was wondering, I appeared on Sam Bushman's show on Wednesday, and we spent 2 hours breaking down the fallout from this verdict and where things may go from here. And Sam brought up the question. I thought it was good enough to bring it to TPC. So second-degree murder means you intended to do it. Third-degree murder means you didn't intend to do it, but he's guilty of both simultaneously. Was that interesting, or would you normally be guilty of one charge but not the other? Or was the jury just so fearful of Black Lives Matter terrorists that they were going to just hit him with anything the state? I thought the state brought the three different charges because they were hoping that, in spite of the evidence, which I think exonerated Chauvin, that the jury would settle for at least homicide. That's why I thought there were so many charges. Is it, in your professional opinion, unusual, or is this common that you would be found guilty of what appears to be conflicting charges? You meant to do it, you didn't mean to do it.
Well, back in an older, simpler age in America, a prosecutor would look at the facts and decide which of these four categories his particular homicide, and they're all homicides, fell into, and that's the charge they would bring. Nowadays, maybe it's because of not having that much skill as prosecutors anymore to actually prove what they charge, or because of the necessity of getting some type of verdict to appease a howling lynch mob like they were in Minnesota, they overcharge. They bring everything, throw everything in the kitchen sink in here that could, so that they will get at least one prosecution out of this cornucopia of charges. That's becoming standard operating procedure for attorney general's offices and for prosecuting attorneys, district attorneys in America now. It wasn't that way when I first started practicing law, but, you know, things are changing, and I think it's important to make a note, a sidebar right here. We have passed into a new age, people. What used to be standard practice, what used to be standard expectations in, for example, the criminal justice arena, have now totally changed. Prosecution now is not based on a rational assessment of the facts by a jury the way that the Anglo-Saxon jury system was intended to operate. Now you can bring in proof of the emotional impact that a certain person's death had on bystanders, members of the public, and whatnot. That used to be obviously irrelevant, immaterial evidence that would be objectionable. Now, the judges let it in because they are trying to make gestures of reaching across to black people who tend to be more emotional rather than rational in matters like this. So that's what they're doing. You know, it may sound like it's a put down, but that's obviously what happened in the George Floyd trial. Now, we have a new America now. Basically, hatred of white people has gone mainstream. Back in the civil rights movement, I've always said that the left pretends to be benevolent, but every left-wing movement is actually motivated by malevolence. Now what's happened is, back in the 50s and 60s, they supposedly were fighting for racial reconciliation between the races. Now it's quite obvious that what they were really intending upon and where we have now arrived is racial polarization. By tearing down monuments, by prosecuting white police for killing black people, they're telling you that they are against white people and they want the two races to be at odds with each other.
Thank you, Keith. We are going to take a deep dive into this comprehensive opinion and analysis on the fallout of the verdict being handed down this week in Minneapolis in the case of Officer Derek Chauvin. Stay tuned.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win. They lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. By a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm, available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The Foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing Foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various Foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
The spirit of the American West is live and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues affecting the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like the 2021 Real Buckaroo Calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Well, my mom smokes and my dad smokes, and I saw them smoking, so I tried it. They're telling me not to smoke, but they smoke themselves.
When it comes to smoking, are you sending mixed signals?
But when you teach someone a certain way to do things and you go back on that certain way, it sends mixed signals to the person that they're trying to teach. The parents need to be the example.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody. James Edwards, Keith Alexander. We're integrating some new software into our studio tonight, so you can let us know. Do we sound better? Do we look better? I think you look pretty sharp. Keith's in his greaser jacket tonight. He looks like John Travolta in Grease. But anyway, we are integrating a little bit new technology, trying to upgrade some things here around the studio and at the network. And so thankful to Sam Bushman and his team for helping us with that. So far, so good, I think. But we're talking, of course, about the fallout from the Chauvin verdict. I will have to admit to being a little crestfallen. I don't know anything about Chauvin. He could have agreed with us on issues. He could have disagreed with us on everything. He could have been a good guy, a not-so-good guy. Don't know. But in this case, he was a proxy for our people. And it was because of his race and the fact that he was a straight white male that they so desperately wanted to stick it to him. And there's some things we've got to cover in this hour, Keith, that are essential. Obviously, what Maxine Waters did on the eve of the verdict being handed down. And then this. Did you hear this, ladies and gentlemen? Did you hear about this? One of the jurors in the Chauvin trial was interviewed by KARE, Channel 11, in Minneapolis. I don't know which network that is an affiliate of, but it's one of the major network affiliates in Minneapolis, KARE, Channel 11. And they interviewed, after the trial was over, one of the jurors. And they asked the juror, it was a woman, did you want to be a juror? And she said that she had mixed feelings. And then as she continued to elaborate on the verdict, she said, Keith, and I quote, I am reading from an establishment news source, and though they'll lie about everything, they won't lie about something that proves our points right. That's for sure. A direct quote from the juror, I did not want to go through rioting and destruction again, and I was concerned about people coming to my house if they were not happy with the verdict. Now, Keith, what that is two words, mob rule, plain and simple. You have now, after the trial is over, a juror saying she was concerned about rioting and destruction and people terrorizing her at her home. Guilty on all charges. Mistrial? If that's not a mistrial, and you had a sitting member of Congress, Maxine Waters, and her orcs coming in and saying that we have to get more confrontational, we have to not go away, there's a huge difference in the context of that versus the Capitol Hill tour on January 6th. They tried to squint, and they tried to see how they could twist Donald Trump's words as a call to insurrection. But you got to understand, there's differences between these groups, and context is key here. The Donald Trump supporters had never committed as much as jaywalking. They never even got as much as a parking ticket at any of the Trump rallies. When you go into the middle of a Black Lives Matter rally, who have been known for causing billions of dollars worth of damage over the course of the last year through arson and looting and vandalism and destruction, and you tell that group that they have to get more confrontational after they've literally set America on fire for a year, and that didn't play a role in all of this. The jury was never sequestered. They were only sequestered during deliberations, which lasted like 48 hours, less than 2 days. They should have been sequestered the whole time. You have here, though, getting back to the point, a juror that said flat out, concerned about on all charges. Is that a mistrial? I mean, should that be a cause for a mistrial?
I don't think it quite reaches that level. What it is juror intimidation. If she had said, I would have voted to acquit, but for the fact that I was afraid that the mob would burn down my house or harm me or my family, that would be grounds for a mistrial. But as it is, she didn't quite go that far. But the problem is this. There's been a whole change in the landscape now. What they've done is they have worked blacks into an inconsolable frenzy. 13% of the population of the United States, 65% here in Memphis, 4% or 5% in Minneapolis, and, you know, every city is different, but basically this population of blacks is concentrated in urban areas. Urban areas, as a result, will become less and less friendly as a locale for white people to live. What's going to happen is you're going to be afraid that if you, let's say, have a traffic accident with a black person, and it happens in a black part of town, and the black people that are there don't like it. Let's say some child is hurt or something. They're liable to kill you, like they were about to kill James Alton Fields in Charlottesville. But the media is the message, as Marshall McLuhan said. What the media's take governs what public opinion will be now, at least. That is in the eyes of the general public, because if there is a different reaction from the public at large, the media won't report it. They will basically report that everybody supports their take on this, just like they did George Floyd. So urban areas are going to become uninhabitable by white people. White people are going to have to head for the hills, basically, in order to survive. And that's because media controls the message. Media controls people's perceptions. Other people's perceptions are the ultimate reality. Most people aren't energetic enough or curious enough to go to the internet and find out the information that people that listen to this show find out. And as a result, they just fall right in line with it. And that's where our problems lie. Control of the media is key. That is the key thing for all
media,
of this.
The media is the one who brought the charges against Chauvin. If the races had been reversed in this case, you wouldn't have had charges. Now, why do we say that? Well, we can point to a very real comparison here, and that is, of course, the black police officer who shot the white woman, Ashley Babbitt, in the neck for busting through a window. You had a black officer in that case shoot her dead, even though she was no threat to him physically. She was just a small woman. And in this case, inadvertently, a white police officer kills a career criminal who was hopped up on drugs, resisting arrest. He dies by accident. And, of course,
first of all, Ashley Babbitt was not threatening. Okay, let me just say, Ashley Babbitt wasn't threatening that policeman in any way.
And, of course, anyway, nevertheless, Jay in Florida, thank you for being patient. How are you?
I'm doing great. Good talking to you, James and Keith. This black police officer that murdered Ashley Babbitt, no one wants his name to be known. And his That's name right. is Michael Leroy Byrd, B-Y-R-D.
I did not even know that. So yeah,
everybody knows bird is a word. Now we do know it. Here, okay, and thank you.
Here we have now bird our audience educating us here on this. that's a good song too, by the way. Great. That's a masterpiece. That's an opus.
The Trashmen, and they're from Minneapolis, by the way. Did you know that? What an irony.
That's 6 degrees of
separation. The reason I called is that I've come up with a new slogan that I created. And I just hand-printed it on a bumper sticker. It's Joe Biden, making America racist again.
That's it. That's been their intention, Jay, since Brown versus Board of Education. They pretend to be benevolent. Their intent is actually malevolent. They were not about racial reconciliation, which they pretended to be. They've been all about racial polarization. Now they have the black population of America whipped into an inconsolable frenzy about their supposed persecution at the hands of whites.
You've always said this, too. It was never about gaining equal footing with whites. It was about switching places. And you see this now. I mean, didn't we always hear about Klan jury intimidation? Well, what in the hell was Black Lives Matter doing? Yes, Jay, before we go to break, to you again.
Well, you know, I'm 68 years old, and I've never seen this country as polarized racially in my whole life, and it's just blows my mind.
Well, the left has succeeded in their intended mission. That's what they're doing, and that's what we have to look forward to in the future.
I actually said that on one of the appearances I made on one of these other streams, is that I think racial polarization and racial anxiety is greater now than it was in the 1960s and the 1860s and any other time. Thank you so much for the call, Jay. Much more to get to as we continue on this hour, looking at the aftermath of the Chauvin verdict. Tim Murdoch will be with us in the second hour. Confederate History Month, we'll wrap that up in the third hour. So much more to come. Stay with us, won't you?
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
President Biden has officially recognized atrocities committed against Armenians in the early 20th century as a genocide. In a statement marking Armenian Remembrance Day, the president said the day was a time to remember all those who died in the Ottoman-era Armenian genocide and recommit ourselves to preventing such an atrocity from ever occurring again. Previous administrations had avoided using the word genocide out of concern of damaging relations with Turkey. An estimated 1.5 million Armenian people were killed by the Ottoman Empire between 1915 and 1923. And several states have begun administering the Johnson & Johnson vaccine again after an 11-day pause. The FDA and CDC lifted the pause Friday night after a CDC advisory panel recommended readministering the shots after looking into several cases of rare blood clots. Illinois, Massachusetts, New York, and Virginia are just some of the states that have begun administering the shot again. You're listening to USA Radio News.
If cancel culture and censorship continue at their current pace, there will be nothing left of the truth. The Epoch Times was founded to keep truth alive. We ask the questions we think you'd ask. We check facts without regard to any political agenda. No one tells us what to cover or how to cover it. We have a special trial subscription offer right now. 1 month of the Epoch Times and total access to our amazing online content for just $1. You'll find it at TrustedNewspaper.com. 1 month, $1. TrustedNewspaper.com.
As you know, one of the worst things you can say in any business or in life, for that matter, is, but we've never done it that way before. Right. What if there's a better way? This is why using MediShare for your healthcare bills is such a great idea. It works. It's way less expensive. It's convenient. It's a better way for so many people. The typical family saves $500 a month. So you've never done it this way before? No problem. Just call. Start saving now. Call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE.
Senate Republicans unveiled a counterproposal to President Biden's more than $2 trillion infrastructure plan, proposing a nearly $600 billion package that's limited to physical infrastructure like roads, bridges, and broadband. That's in contrast to some of the measures in the president's plan, like caregiving for the elderly, manufacturing, and others. Congressman Jason Smith says Democrats and Republicans should be able to agree on a plan that pays for physical infrastructure projects. The Missouri Republican tells Fox News that the GOP senator's proposal does just that without an extra burden on the working class.
This proposal that just recently came out in the Senate is about infrastructure. It is about roads and bridges. And, you know, Republicans and Democrats should be able to work together in making sure that we fix our crumbling roads and bridges. But we definitely don't need to do it at the expense of the working class. And that is what we have to pay attention to. The proposal that Biden, Pelosi, and Schumer brought forward will be a spending boondoggle at the expense of working class. And we can't have that.
This is USA Radio News.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
I was talking a moment ago, obviously made mention a couple of times now that Tim Murdoch is going to be our featured guest tonight. He's just going to join and fall in line on this conversation as it's in progress. But Tim is a great guy, doing great work over there at White Rabbit Radio. And I make appearances on Tim's live stream quarterly. And it just so happened that for the last several weeks, I've been scheduled to appear with Tim on, what day was it earlier this week? It was on Tuesday. It was on the day the verdict came out, on the 20th. I've been scheduled for weeks to appear with him on April the 20th. And it just, under uncanny circumstances, just so happened to be, he went on the air, literally, his scheduled start time was 15 minutes after the judge read the verdict. So I've been planning. It's not as though he said, "Hey, the verdict's in. Can you come on and talk to me about it?" No, I've been pre-planned to appear. So I was on with Tim for about an hour and a half on his live stream, breaking down, I guess, offering the hot takes on this verdict. And we had a really good and well-received run. And it went so well, I wanted to do a little home and home. He had me earlier this week. I wanted to get him on tonight because he's just an excellent commentator. And when you have people who host their own programs, it's like when you have Henrik Palmgren on or any of these others, Jason Kuna. I mean, all of our guests are exceptional, of course. All of our guests are second to none. But when you have another person who does his own show and they come on like Sam Bushman or whomever, it's hand in glove. And so we're going to have Tim on to continue to talk about this. And one of the things we were talking about, of course, Keith, was Maxine Waters. So there, and we mentioned this a moment ago as well. Ironically, Maxine Waters, who flew into Minneapolis to gin up the terrorists in case the verdict didn't go their way, she requested police protection whilst she was in Minnesota. So she had a police escort while she was there. Of course, she should be impeached for incitement. If they could impeach Donald Trump for incitement, she said things far more in your face and far more bluntly and far more not open to interpretation to a group far more dangerous, a group that's really known for only one thing, that's terroristic destruction. And the Republicans did make a half-hearted effort to censure her, but of course, with the Democrats controlling the House, the Senate, and the presidency, that got batted down pretty quickly. And so Maxine continues to be Maxine there with her orcs. They were there, and if this had gone the wrong way, they would have certainly burned down Minneapolis. There would have been countless cities on fire throughout the country, and we know that the jury was well aware of that fact, based upon their own statements after they were released from duty. And of course, the defense attorney, who was by no means an all-star lineup like you had with Shapiro and Cochran and the OJ, this was just the assigned cop in the rotation, or excuse me, the assigned the defense attorney in the rotation in service to the police department. It was just his turn, and his number was up, and he got assigned to the case.
Well, he was probably a fairly talented defense attorney, or else the police association wouldn't have chosen him to be the offender.
I don't think
of
he was chosen. I think it's just, it comes up when your number's up, you're up, and the next cop that needs an
attorney. Well, I know, but on the other hand,
to be in that rotation, it's not like
the public defender. If he was a public defender, I would agree.
Well,
with
I don't even know if anybody could have won this case with the extenuating circumstances.
No, in Minnesota, you couldn't do that, I don't think. And let me say, Black Lives Matter should stand for burn, loots, and murders. And again, let's just get right down to the nitty gritty. The real rabble-rouser wasn't Donald Trump in regard to January the 6th, and I will not call it an insurrection because it had nothing. It was basically the mostly peaceful protest that we've heard about. On the other hand, what Maxine Waters did was true rabble-rousing, and rabble-rousing of the lowest sort. And the fact that she gets a pass from the mainstream media and Donald Trump, they will not rest until he's dead. Again, this is, again, showing you that the media does it.
The reversing of the races. Donald Trump, white man, it's a called insurrection. Her literally calling for an insurrection. She's a black woman and a Democrat, no big deal. The Ashley Babbitt's police murder by cop, no big deal. Obviously, Chauvin and George, I mean, they have deified this petty street thug. They've deified him. Nancy Pelosi literally said, Keith, we thank George Floyd for sacrificing himself so that we could purge our system of racism, as if he willingly made this Christ-like sacrifice. I mean, he was just a guy who died being overdosed on drugs.
He was a criminal caught with his hand in the cookie jar, okay? Anyway, and then he resisted arrest. If he had not resisted arrest, he would probably still be alive today. If he had not ingested all those drugs trying to destroy evidence, he probably would be alive today. But again, what you were talking about was a famous comment by Frantz Fanon, the black guy from French Guiana who went to Paris in the 40s and made a big splash by being the enfant terrible, as they used to say in France, of the Marxists and the communists there at the time. And his famous comment was, the true wish of the slave is not to achieve his freedom, but rather that he and his slave master exchange places. That's exactly, like you said, what has happened here. White people are being persecuted in the way that they used to pretend that black people were persecuted by whites, but whites, at least in America, in the 20th century, never persecuted blacks like this, okay? This is, you know, basically hundreds or if thousands of black deaths at the hands of other blacks, that doesn't count. That's nothing, ho-hum, nothing to see here. But in the rare situation when a black person is killed by a white police officer, regardless of the circumstances, that's totally unacceptable. In other words, it's like caste system in India. If an untouchable killed a Brahmin, that was terrible. That was unacceptable. There was no excuse for it under any circumstances. And that's what it's become now in America for a white person, no matter how justified, if they wind up taking the life of a black person, like, for example, I think the guy's name was Nicholas that in Columbus, Ohio, that killed a black perp that had her knife raised and was about to kill another black teenager. He shoots her. It's a split second decision.
We're going to talk about that in the next
And hour. I think that anyone that knows police work and sees that Twitter feed that I've seen, and I think you've seen too, he made a split second decision. It was absolutely correct, and he did. There was no time for anything else, regardless of what Joy Behar and the people on The View say. But because he is white and that person was black, that was a violation of the new caste system in America. An untouchable, i.e. a white, killing a Brahmin, in other words, a black, the person of the highest caste, is totally unacceptable and will be punished regardless of the circumstances. That person is going to not only lose their job, they're going to lose their reputation, and they're possibly going to jail for the rest of their life because of the new caste system that the left has enforced upon American society in today's America.
Collection of hot takes here. We can continue this in the final segment. In the next hour, when Tim Murdoch comes on, by the way, we are going to talk about that shooting of the would-be stabber in Columbus, Ohio. The media tried to get that one to fit into the narrative, but it was just so in your face they couldn't. Obviously, the insurrection, the Black Lives Matter terrorist did the exact same thing to the Oklahoma State House, really a lot more in your face than the tourists did at the Capitol on January the 6th. But have you heard anything about that? There have been any arrests? Is the FBI launching
a lot more damage there?
Exhaustive search to arrest every single one of these people that crossed the threshold.
Well, not only that, look at the amount of damage done in the Oklahoma State House versus at the Capitol. We had four broken windows at the Capitol. And Ashley Babbitt paid with her life for breaking one of them, or at least going being the first person through.
They tried to demonstrate how trashed those people left the Capitol, and it showed the best they could do was pull up a janitor picking up some water bottles that they had left on the floor and some things like that. It may have been a little bit worse than that, but it wasn't anything.
But again,
compare that to the sacking of police stations, the burning out of police
stations. It's the caste system. It's a, what the Brahmins, if something negative happens to a Brahmin, or if any misbehavior occurs at the behest of a untouchable, if an untouchable does something to a Brahmin or in the Brahmin's precincts or neighborhood, then that's terrible. That's horrible. Well, basically, they talk about there being no-go zones in places like Sweden and whatnot in France for the native white population versus the immigrant Muslim population. Well, now black neighborhoods in American cities are going to be no-go zones. In fact, more and more, the entire city is going to be a no-go zone for white people. And that's exactly what the left wants. They want to take this thing over. They want to do a Franz Fanon. They want to replace, the slave wants to replace the master.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to do one more segment cleaning up our commentary on this horrific travesty of American jurisprudence, this unfair, unjust.
The world turned upside down.
Unfair, unjust verdict in the Chauvin trial, which was a show trial. Then Tim Murdoch in the next hour.
I'm 7 years old. I'm sitting here in the corner having a time out until Mom comes to talk to me. All I did was cut my sister's hair. I was just trying to help. I guess Mom didn't like how I did it. In a minute, she'll be back and ask me if I know what I did was wrong. Maybe I shouldn't have cut her hair. And she'll say we all make mistakes because we're just learning about stuff. And she'll give me a hug and wind up talking about more stuff.
No matter what you talk to your kids about, love is what they'll hear.
I really like Mom's timeouts, and I think she likes them too. Yeah, I think they help her remember how much she loves me.
A thought from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Visit us at Mormon.org.
Conceived in liberty, carry its head high if it denies protection to the youngest and most vulnerable of its citizens? Can a country founded on God-given rights continue to thrive without understanding that life is a precious gift from our Creator? I believe that great nations and great civilizations spring from a people who have a moral compass.
I don't think a civilization can long endure that does not have respect for all human life, born and not yet born.
I will be in earnest. I will not equivocate, and I will not excuse. I will not retreat an inch, and I will be heard.
One thing I promise you, I will always take a stand for life.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-7777. 6397.
Welcome back, everybody. So some hot takes on this as we clean up what was to be a bit of a surprise. I don't guess I would have.
No surprise at all, really, considering
I didn't think they'd get him on
Minnesota.
Everything. I didn't think they'd get him on everything.
You don't understand. I was born in Minnesota. I understand Minnesota nice.
Well,
and I understand that these people would sacrifice their firstborn rather than be considered unnice to a black person.
Well, okay. Well, here's another thing Minnesota did. Minnesota preemptively boarded up their entire city because they knew they are dealing with a lawless horde that cannot accept reason or logic when you're dealing with BLM and Antifa. This is the nature of the mob. And so why did they preemptively board up their city? Because they feared the mob. They feared if the jury actually somehow got this right. And remember, it didn't take one courageous juror to convince the other 11. It only took one to do anything at all. There wasn't even one that had enough courage.
Minnesota nice. But then, on the other hand, Minnesota nice doesn't even compare with Portland nice. Now, they've allowed Portland to be taken over and sacked, like the Germanic hordes coming in on 410 Alaric into Rome for over a year and done nothing about it. See, this spinelessness on the part of white people is the most alarming development, in my opinion, of this. It's not that blacks can be whipped into an inconsolable.
It isn't going to save them. It's not as if when BLM or Antifa are out to harm white people that they have some special halo that appears so they know they're one of the quote-unquote good whites. But I would say this. I did say this, that I would be pleasantly surprised if Chauvin was found not guilty on all charges. And we've been similarly surprised before with the George Zimmerman verdict, the verdict of Officer Darren Wilson and the Michael Brown shooting in Ferguson, of course.
Rodney King.
I imagine that the jury would compromise and hang him on a lower charge to appease the mob, which is what I felt the prosecution was counting on the whole way, but they got a hell of a lot more than that. And as we've said before tonight already, if the races in the Chauvin Floyd situation had been reversed, and by that I mean if Chauvin had been a black police officer and Floyd had been a white petty thug drug addict, it wouldn't have even made local news.
It would have been a story about the Kardashians instead.
They wouldn't have had charges because the media wouldn't have ginned up the charges. And it was interesting to me when it was announced that the verdict had come in, how quickly the orcs assembled outside of that courthouse. I mean, they were there as if they spawned out of the ground, which is, of course, it's easy to do when you don't work for a living. But there they were. Within minutes, there was hundreds of people ready to burn down the city. Now, how do we know if the races had been reversed, again, there would have been no charges? Well, we have the Ashley Babbitt situation. We have the Maxine Waters call for an insurrection versus
Well,
Donald
Mr.
Trump
Byrd, for example, there's been no prosecution whatsoever of Mr. Byrd, the black Capitol Hill policeman.
If he had been a white officer shooting a black woman who was coming through unarmed through a window, if he'd shot her in the neck, you think there would have been charges? I mean,
now that would have been a real quandary. If there had been a black Trump supporter shot by a white policeman, I don't know what would have happened to the mainstream media.
Well, there would have been a black Trump supporter first.
Well, I know, but just think about this. What could they do? They hate Trump so much that they would not. I mean, they would basically be like, the Terminator when, he's shot at the end. They'd have all sorts of misfires in their connections and whatnot. What happened in the George Floyd trial is that white people in certain parts of this nation are spineless, supine, totally defenseless. They will not stand up for themselves. They will see themselves and their families and their cities murdered. On the other hand, we have places like Mississippi and Tennessee and Arkansas and other places in America where that's not going to happen. Now, again, this bodes a breakup of America because there's no way. See, it's obvious that there are different standards in different parts of the country. The one thing that is not variable is we have the same media broadcasting to people in Memphis, Tennessee, as you do in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and or in, let's say, Rossville, Tennessee, as in Portland, Oregon. This is where the problem is. White people are going to have to start developing a sense of racial solidarity that matches that of black, brown, and other people. They're going to have to consider jury nullification in these urban areas. Jury nullification is if they don't get a unanimous jury verdict, one white person on that jury can hang it up, and it's a mistrial. They'll have to try it again, do it again and again and again. And guess what? If that happens, then, and if there is a, let's say, white people are totally behind this, they don't have to get out and demonstrate. They don't need to make themselves targets for the authorities and the media. But because we know how that goes, we know how Charlottesville went. We know how January the 6th went. But then on the other hand, what we can do is use jury nullification, which is one of the reasons why you have juries. Jury nullification is not an aberration or a misfunctioning of the jury system. That's exactly what juries were supposed to do. One conscientious member of the community can foil the prosecution.
Well, here's the thing, too, Keith, is that, well, and of course, if it was as easy as speaking it into being, we would have certainly done it already. It's going to take people of action to do it. And but the thing is, the white people on that jury, and we don't know the makeup of the jury. I mean, they could have all 12 of them could have been out to hang Chauvin from the start, or there could have been some objectors who were fearful of reprisal, and that's why they voted for it. We don't know the mindset of the people on that jury. But what I do know is this. They think that they may have staved off violence by giving the mob what they wanted, but just like when you coddle an insolent child, when you coddle insolent children by caving to their demands, you only encourage more
misbehavior
going forward, and that's what's going to happen. Because of this, they may have saved Minneapolis from burning last week, but they're not going to stop. Antifa has already gone on record in Newsweek saying they're going to continue the violence. And why wouldn't they continue the violence? Because they're getting their way.
And there are no negative consequences.
And we know that justice for George Floyd actually means lynch Derek Chauvin because we hate white people. The mob justice prevailed in this case. The cowardice of the judge and the jury has been staggering. A jury finding a police officer guilty of murder in order to bribe a mob not to burn down cities across this country is a new one as America races towards its nadir. And I just have to say this, too. I was watching Fox News's coverage, Keith, of the trial right before I went on, of the verdict, I should say, right before I went on with Tim Murdoch that day. I got to catch a few minutes of the post-verdict reaction. And they said that the people there assembled were cheering as if their sports team won a championship. See, to me, that is so sick to see these people cheering an innocent man for going to jail for perhaps the rest of his life. You could say, well, I think justice was served in this case, but it's all just regrettable. It's all sad. No, they were cheering because their hatred was satiated.
Because it's total partisanship. There is no principle involved. There's no resort to a colorblind
their
principle.
Hatred was satiated.
And what could the judge have done to prevent this? Well, it's really easy what he could have done.
Concerned, I'm sure the judge was just as fearful of his home being burned down as the jury was, or else he would have declared a mistrial in the Maxine Waters.
No,
Waters thing. Come on, and he even said, "Well, you."
It should have stopped long before then, James. He should have said, "You're right. You can't get a fair trial in Minneapolis, but it has to be in Minnesota. So I'll put it up in Kitts County, for example, which is in the northwest corner, and then." You wouldn't have had, you know, how could you'd have the people from Black Lives Matter up there in this white topia place of rural people who tend to be more independent minded and whatnot. That's what should have been done. It was quite obvious that a change of venue was needed in this case.
I gotta ask you
and
a
if
question.
It would have done, I think it may have preserved the sanctity of our judicial system. Our judicial system is batting zero now, both with not stepping in for the Trump election fraud situation and now this.
Well, and I was watching the Fox News coverage after the verdict, and they were interviewing some of the would-be rioters, and one of them said, on the air, no uncertain terms, street reporter for Fox News said, you know, how do you feel about this? And he said he felt great that now he could go home and have a beer and celebrate instead of having to, quote, jack up the street. So he just said no in certain terms on national television. Yeah, I was down here to burn down the city, but since I got what I want, I'm going to go have a beer now. And again, as any decent parent knows, coddling these children doesn't encourage good behavior for long. It guarantees future tantrums. Greg Johnson had some good takes on this as well. Greg Johnson at Countercurrents. Derek Chauvin, he wrote, was convicted because of the threat of massive BLM and Antifa violence. If he was acquitted, If he had been acquitted, a serious country would have never allowed this, since convicting Chauvin will produce more violence than acquitting him. That's a great one. Greg Johnson also said civilization is a fragile thing. It depends on the forces of order constantly repressing the forces of chaos. Also true. Convicting Chauvin rewards political violence. Rewarding violence produces more of it. A serious country would have long ago crushed BLM and Antifa for being domestic terrorist organizations. Instead, they're going after the interlopers at the Capitol on the 6th, who have probably, almost to a man, never committed a crime in their lives.
And on the other hand, the judge could have been above the fray and said, we need to change the venue. He could have sent it up to some far northern on the Canadian border county. And up there, let the good rural people of Minnesota make a decision that was not going to be colored by the cowardice that was shown by the citizenry of Minneapolis. And I'm, you know, people say, why are you going after everybody in Minneapolis? Well, look, Minneapolis is, you know, what they have done in regard to this, what they've done in regard to other racial outrages against white people, shows you that those people are spineless.
All right, well, that's just the opening salvo tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Still much more to come. Tim Murdoch of White Rabbit Radio is up next. We will continue our coverage of the Chauvin verdict. Also, we're going to talk about the insurrection in Oklahoma and the police, the policeman, the white officer who shot the would-be stabbing assailant. So much more to come tonight.